All right, well, holding on Coastal Revolve, I'm going to Aleph 8 line.
From the top?
From the top, yeah. Okay, so we're discussing like this. We're in the middle of talking about Rabbi Yossi's opinion about Tumas Mes, Tumas Maga, Masa, and Oidol, where we're trying to establish the idea that Rabbi Yossi holds that Tumas Oidol is also a subspecies of Tumas Maga. We talked about you have the case over there where you have a network of ropes above a mess, a little bit above a mess according to Abaya, far above a mess according to Rava, where if you put your finger between the holes of the netting, then you're going to become tame, but if you touch the ropes themselves, you'll be tahar. Rabbi Yossi tells us that din. So according to Rava, that teaches us that if you have the network of ropes far above the mess, much more than a tefach above, when he puts his finger between the holes, he's forming an oil. But and then we're calling and Rabbi Yossi is calling him Negea. So you see that an oil even much more than one tefach above is still considered maga. Abaya says not necessarily. It's because Rabbi Yossi would say only if it was within a tefach. The reason why only if it was within a tefach, and we said the reason why the mess is not in the time of the ropes is even though they're within a tefach of it is because Rabbi Yossi holds tuma tmuna ein bekach. So we discussed the idea that Rabbi Yossi says a tuma ritzutza, a tuma that's in a space less than a tefach by a tefach by a tefach. Unlike the chachamim who say that the tuma then penetrates upward. Rabbi Yossi says that not, and we had a case involving. We have a Mishnah that says this, but it's Abaya who's explaining that shows that Rabbi Yossi holds that Tumah Tmuna or Tumah Ritzutza is not Bekas.
That's why he would say
Abaya would say if the ropes are more than a tefach above the mess, then you have an actual oihel over there. Rabbi Yossi would not call that negia. That's called oihel if you then touch the space between the ropes. The only time he would call it negia is if you're within a tefach of the mess. Why is the tumma not going directly upward if you don't have an oihel tefach? Because Rabbi Yossi holds that even when you have tumma over there, the tumma doesn't go upward when you have less than an oihel tefach, as we see in the case of the cabinet with the drawers in it.
So it just stays, nothing.
It doesn't go above the mess. It just, if you touch the mess itself, or if the mess was inside an oil, then the tumma would spread out throughout the oil. But like this, you don't have that. Okay.
So that's according to?
This is Abaya explaining. This is Abaya explaining Rabbi Yossi.
And according to Rava.
Rava's not saying one way or the other. Maybe he would. So that's what we're going to see. We're going to see as we continue the Gemara whether Rava will agree with this understanding of Rabbi Yossi. But right now, Abaya is saying that we see from that also from the case involving the cabinet with the drawers in it that Rabbi Yossi is saying that the tumma is not bekas v'ola, and therefore you have so therefore if the drawer itself is a tefach by a tefach by a tefach, then the tumma is contained in there, and Rabbi Yossi will say it doesn't go out of there through the opening of the drawer. And by the way, I mean, we mentioned yesterday the possibility that you have let's say a hole less than a tefach in the compartment, and you get things in and out of there. You don't even need that. I mean, you could also have it a drawer, let's say, and the drawer is made in such a way, you know, you have some cabinets that have drawers that won't pull out all the way. So it happens that this one is made in such a way that when you pull it out, you don't have a tefach of opening. Anyway, so the Chachamim are saying that slows tumah lotes, eventually the tumah derech tumah lotes, eventually the tumah goes out of there and then causes the whole house to become tumah. And Rabbi Yossi says that even if there's a hole less than a tefach, but not, and even if you have the whole compartment, the whole drawer is less than a tefach by a tefach by a tefach, still the tumah is contained within there and is not very cast. It doesn't pierce through to you. Okay.
So it stays
inside the cabinet, basically. It stays inside the compartment. Yeah. The Gemara says, "V'romi de Rabbi Yossi ad Rabbi Yossi." With this understanding of Rabbi Yossi, then we have a contradiction between two statements of Rabbi Yossi. Ditzan, namely, we have another Mishnah in Olos that says, "Hakelav sha'ocha b'sar mes." If a dog ate flesh from a dead person, and by the way, for this purpose, it could be either a yid or a goy, but no, actually, because you have a machlokas tanoim, you have a machlokas Reb Shimon, and the chachamim whether a goy's remains are matamim ba'oil. Halacha is like Reb Shimon, that it doesn't. So therefore, of necessity, we'd have to be talking about a yid. Okay, so a kelev she'ochel b'tames. Now, if the dog was alive, there would be no problem, because we learned earlier in the Masechta about the concept of tumah blua. When you have a tumah that's swallowed up within the body of a living creature, then it's not able to go out and mitame other things. It doesn't matter a human or a dog or whatever. Yeah. But here, what happens is a mesakel. If it's inside the dog's body, yeah. But in this case, a mesakel. Here, the dog died. And the dog's body, the dog's carcass, is laying over there on the threshold of the house. And Rashi says the head of it, the neck of it, is inward. It is towards the house. So is the tumah going to go out from its body and go into the house? So Rav Meir says, if the neck of the dog is at least a tefach wide, which how you measure that, there's a couple of different explanations that we should. Well, it depends on the size of the dog, right? I mean, a small dog it won't, but a big dog it would. So how do you measure whether you have to say a tefach? There's a couple of ideas that Rashi just says roichav tefach v'tzavora if its neck is a tefach wide, which would imply, in other words, the easiest way to do is measure the circumference of the neck, and if the circumference is 3 tefachim, then you know that the diameter is an amma, because more or less circular.
The diameter
has to be a tefach, The Tosfos HaRosh actually takes a little bit of a different view of it. He says that you can't just say if the circumference is only exactly 3 tefachim, because the fact of the matter is, I mean, you have skin, you have muscle, you have whatever. So therefore, he calculates it would have to be a little larger than that. But the circumference would have to be like 4 tefachim and something. And Tosfos also discusses over here. The question. Whether maybe Rav Meir would say choshikim lahashlim, that if you have, we have this concept, for example, in Menachos, in connection with the halachos of mezuzah, when you have something which is almost the right size, do we consider as if the area around it was carved out so that you have a full size? So there we had it in connection with a mezuzah, let's say with an archway or something. So here, for example, the idea Tosfos discusses, would Rav Meir say, if let's say the dog's neck was a tefach in diameter, but that means you don't necessarily have an exact square of a tefach there. Would we say chosikin lahashlim? Would we say that it's considered as though we carve out as if we carved out part of the neck in order to make? Okay, whatever. Anyway,
you could always take what?
Well, no. Okay, if we say that a mayor holds chosikin, then yeah. Okay, anyway. So fine. So the mayor says it's
a circle inscribed in a square, or a square inscribed.
A circle inscribed in a square. So yeah. So if we say chosikin lahashlim, then you have a way to bring the tumah in. Right? So therefore, so the mayor says maybe it's a tumah. Then if the neck is a tefach wide, it will bring the tumah into the house, because then. What it is you consider, therefore, Rashi says, as if like the top side of the neck is, or the top flank of the animal is like an oihel over the tumah, and therefore now you have then you have the top surface of the animal, including its head, including its upper jaw, becomes an oihel on the tefach, and the tumah therefore is brought into the house through the neck and out the mouth, and therefore goes into the house. Maybe it's a tumah. If not, then it doesn't bring in the tumah because you don't have a width of a kelah.
That's
your main. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi says that we have to consider, and we have to consider where exactly, and the Gemara assumes at this point in the discussion that royin means we actually have to figure out where inside the dog's body is the tumah. If the piece of flesh inside the dog, in other words, effectively we would have to x-ray the dog, basically, not literally, but in other words, the idea is we would have to figure out where inside the animal's body is this piece. If it comes out, if you measure and find the negative shock of the lifnim, that is anywhere from the lintel and inward, then the house is tome, because then what you have is the tome is inside that part of the dog, and therefore it's bakas va'ola, goes directly up, and therefore and then goes directly up into the house, and therefore it's matame the house, which is why we're bringing this in over here.
The head of the dog?
We're assuming that we're talking about still the case that the head of the dog is inside the house.
Just the head is inside the house.
Well, so that's the thing. Rabbi Yossi, no, so if only the head was inside, you wouldn't have to be roiling. You would know the piece is inside the animal's stomach, so it's obviously outside the house. the case would have to be that half the dog's body is lying inside and half outside. So Rav Meir is just saying it depends strictly on the size of the neck. And Rav Yossi seems to be saying that depends. We have to figure out where the tumor is. If the tumor is inside the dog's body, is anywhere from the lintel going inward, in the half of the dog's body which is inside, then habayis tumah, then the house is tumah, because then the tumah is bekas va'ola, it pierces through the dog and goes upward and goes into the house, and then it's metame the whole house. And if it's anywhere from the lintel outward, then the house would be tahor, because then when the tumah is bekas va'ola, it's bekas va'ola and ends up outside the house.
So the back part of the dog is inside the house, the front part?
No. Okay, again, the front part of the dog is inside the house. We haven't gotten yet to the case where the back is inside. Right now, we only have one case so far. The dog is lying over there on the escuela. Part of it is inside, part of it is outside. Rav Meir says, assuming that the snout of the dog is inside, if the neck is per se achetach, then the tumor automatically goes in, even if the part of the animal here, if this is the dog over here. So Rav Meir is saying, as long as the neck is a tefach wide and it's inside the house, I don't care if the tumor is out here beyond the threshold, because the tumor is going to go out through here, through the neck, through the mouth, and go into the house. Rav Yossi seems to be saying that we have to consider where exactly inside the dog's stomach is the piece. If it's over here, then yeah, bekas v'ola, and therefore it's inside the house. If it's here, then it's bekas v'ola, and it's outside the house. That's what Rav Meir says. That's what Rav Yossi seems to be saying. Then the Mishnah continues, Rav Elazar Omer, people b'snim abayis tahor. Rav Elazar says it depends which way its mouth is facing, the dog's mouth. If its mouth is going into the house and its tail and everything are outside the house, then habayis tahor, then the house would be tahor.
It's the mouth of the animal.
And so again, the mouth of the animal is inside. So Rav Elazar says, just the opposite, then the house will be tougher. Because he says, basically, what's the normal way for the tumor to go out from the body of an animal? The normal way would be that it goes out the back end, that it defecates it. So therefore, you can't say derech tumah lofeis, that the normal way of the tumor is going to go out through the mouth, like Rav Meir says. But he's also saying that it's not bekas va'ola, like Rav Yossi says. Therefore, what happens is, so if its mouth is facing towards the house, habayis tahor, then the house will be tahor. Piblachot, but if the mouth of the dog is outward and the back end of the dog is inside, then habayis tumah, then the house is tumah. They should tumah yotze derech shula, because the normal way is the tumah is going to come out through the back end, right? Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says, a fourth opinion, regardless whether the mouth is facing in or facing out, or whether the tumor is in the half that's over the threshold or the half that's not, either way, in all those cases, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira would say that the house is tummy.
Because
he would say that it could go either, first of all, it could go either way. It could go through the mouth or through the other end. Also, Rashi says sometimes you could have the same way as the dog could have defecated it, the same way it could have thrown it up. So therefore, you can call it equally darka lotes either way. And therefore, so either way, he's going to say the house is talking. So let's talk about Rav Yossi, because that's what we're focusing on, trying to figure out Rav Yossi's opinion. Now, when Rav Yossi says, so again, Rav Meir starts by saying that if the neck is a tefach wide, then the tumor goes into the house. And Rav Yossi is saying you have to look and see where inside the dog is the piece of tumor. So, my love, ein b'tzavore peseach tefach, for Rav Yossi. Shouldn't we assume that Rav Yossi is referring to the case where the mouth is less than a tefach wide? That, in other words, in that case, Rav Meir would say that the house is not tummy, even though the piece is inside the animal's stomach, which happens to be over the threshold, and Rav Yossi apparently, because it can't go out, exactly. And Rav Yossi apparently would be disagreeing with that and say, "Bekas v'ola," that it goes straight up, and therefore it ends up in the house.
Straight up.
Because there's no oil tefach over there. Because the dog is...
The tumor has to go out somewhere.
No, that's the point. Bekas v'ola, if it's under a roof, less than a tefach by a tefach by a tefach, normally we say, as we said before, tumor bekas v'ola, according to Chachamim. Here, Rav Yossi seems to be accepting that principle, which we said before, in the case of the cabinet, he disagrees. That's why we're bringing this. That's the question. Ushmamina tumah tumuna bekas. So that would show then that even a tumah tumuna, even according to Rabbi Yossi, is bekas. It pierces up, and therefore it's considered as though it's outside the dog's body, as though it's just sitting there on the floor inside of the threshold, and therefore the house is going to be tumah. So that would contradict the understanding that we had before, Rabbi Yossi, in the case of the drawer in the cabinet, where we said that Rabbi Yossi seems to be saying that it's not bekas va'ula, and that was Abaye's understanding, which is why he said that when you have the ropes spread out over the mess, that the tumah is not going to be the time of the ropes.
So what is it?
Amar Rava, royin es chalal hatumah katani. Rabbi Yossi is not referring to the case of where the neck is less than a tefach wide and coming to be machmer. No, Rabbi Yossi is actually referring to the case where the neck is a tefach wide and he wants to be makel. He's saying royin is chalal hatumah katani. When he says royin, he doesn't mean like we assume that it means we x-ray the dog and figure out where inside of the tumah is. It means we have to consider. We have to consider the empty space of the neck, halal hasavar, the hollow of the neck, and then so he's saying that we have to see if that has a tefach. In other words, therefore that so we don't care whether it happens to be in the part of the dog's stomach that's inside or that's outside. It just means we see when you the mayor are saying we just look at the width of the neck and see if it's a tefach. I say we have to look at the actual hollow of the neck.
The hollow of the neck is never a tefach.
That depends on the size of the dog.
It depends
on the size of the dog. No. With that said, actually, the truth is, Tosfos talks about the idea of
the tummy or the mouth.
No, Bashas, we're talking about the no. So one second. Okay. Tosfos, as I said, Tosfos mentions over here the point that maybe Rav Meir holds chokkin lahashlim and Rav Yossi doesn't. So that might be one point of contention, in other words, that Rav Meir is saying, as long as you have someplace there, a space, a tefach wide, I don't care if it actually makes up a cubic tefach, because chokkin lahashlim, we consider as though it was carved out in order to make up the extra space. Rav Yossi might be disagreeing with that, and saying, therefore, that the neck has to be larger enough to be able to inscribe a cube of a tefach inside it. But also, actually, the chazanish, well, it means somewhat larger, yeah. But also the Chazanish actually talks about this Gemara and says maybe even Rabbi Yossi would say that it's not that you have to have an actual empty space of a tefach. You know, it's true, only in a very large dog might you have such a thing. But rather, what it is you might consider you have cases in Mishnayos Aleph. You have cases, for example, where you have a bunch of pieces of clothing, let's say, that are folded up, lying one on top of the other. Where if the top one is more than a tefach above the ground, and you have piled under it are several other layers, then we consider as if there's an oil over there. We consider as though the bottom ones weren't there, and the top one constitutes an oil. So in the same way, Rabbi Yossi might be saying over here, to a certain extent we do that, but we look at the different layers of the neck or whatever. It would still be, though, that he's still treating it differently than Rav Meir does, where he says it doesn't even matter layers or not, that just as long as the neck as a whole is a tefach wide. Okay, so in other words, Rabbi Yossi, we could say, is actually disagreeing with Rav Meir on two points. He's saying like this: Rav Meir, number one, you're telling me that if the neck is exactly a tefach wide, even though that includes the bones and the muscles and the skin and everything, that's enough to bring in the tumah. First of all, I disagree with that. And then second of all,
because
he says you need an actual space of a tefach. In other words, again, you could say, for example, well, so again, either that you have an actual hollow space, or even if not, fine, we could consider, let's say, that the muscles are distinct from the bones and the skin or whatever, but still, no. But again, just like the case of folded up towels. So it could be, for example, but there at least you would have to have, you can't have, for example, that if the whole tefach is partly made up of skin and partly of bone and partly of muscle and whatever, and then you have the empty spaces and the kana and the vesh, that you're going to combine that all together. Rabbi Yossi says you can't do that.
Yeah.
So therefore, you need a full tefach of at least of hollow or at least of that the or at least of within the skin and within the bones and whatever. Okay, the point is that he's being makel. So that's one thing. So he's saying to the mayor like this, number one, the Kama Tiash Pasavar Pesach, maybe it's a Truma. Number one, you're arguing that even if the neck is only exactly a Tepach wide, it brings in the Truma. No, a non bosa halalaz in him. I hold that we don't go according to just the width of the neck. We go according to the amount of hollow space that there is there, which means that you need a much larger neck for that. And number two, the Kama Tabayas Kolatome. Number two, you're telling me that Ali Skupa Kulatame actually is how is the gear set that Rashi has and Marsha brings also. You're telling me that if the dog is lying on the threshold, you're considering that the threshold is treated like the inside of the house. I disagree with that also, because mekneged hashokah v'lifnei habayis tameh, because it depends. Is it lying on the part within the lintel with which the door bangs against when you close it? Then habayis tameh. Then the house will be tameh because that's inside the house. Mekneged hashokah v'lachutz habayis tameh. Because in other words, Rabbi Yossi will say that the fact of the matter is, when you have the door closed, you don't have the lintel is not a kefach width of lintel anymore. The lintel, when the door is open, may be wider than kefach, but when you have the door closed, part of it is inside and part of it is outside, and neither one is a whole kefach by itself. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi says that if the dog is lying over there on the threshold, then you need to see which part of it is it on. When the door is closed, would this particular part of the threshold be inside or outside? If it's inside, then yeah, the house is tummy. If not, then not.
Could it be inside if the door is closed?
If the door right now is open, but when the door is closed, is this particular part inside or outside? And that's how we determine whether it's considered inside or outside the house. So therefore, in other words, not no proof, but the point is, in other words, that Mishnah, therefore, is not a contradiction to our understanding of Rabbi Yossi about Tuma Bekas V'Ola, because he's saying that the Tuma is not really Bekeah, it doesn't really pierce through, and therefore, that's why, if the neck has to be a full Tepach wide, and then the Tuma can go in through the neck. And number two, the neck has to be, or the mouth has to be, not just on any part of the threshold, but it has to be on the inner part of the threshold. So nothing about Tumah Bekas, and therefore we can still work with Abaye's understanding of Rabbi Yossi that he holds that Tumah Resutza, that Tumah Tumuna, whatever, hidden Tumah, is not Bekas Vayola. It doesn't pierce and go up. Okay. Fine. And in fact, Rav Acha Brei de Rav Amar. So in other words, that Mishnah is not a contradiction. And in fact, Rav Acha Brei de Rava Masni Lo Behedi. Rav Acha Brei de Rava explicitly learned the Mishnah that way, the way we just explained it. Royan is Chalala Tuma. We thought before, again, that Royan means we have to consider where inside the dog the kazayas of the mess is. Now we're saying, and we just explained, and Rav Acha Brei de Rava, his version of the Mishnah actually went like that. Royan is Chalala Tuma. We actually have to consider the open space within the neck that's going to be bringing in the Tuma and see whether there's enough to do that or not. So nothing to do with where inside the body the Tuma is. Okay, fine. Now, the question is, going back to a previous part of the Sugya, we mentioned before, we got into this whole discussion of Rabbi Yossi's opinion because we were talking about the idea that Tumas Oihel, that we had a case where a person was touching one half Kezias of a mess, and meanwhile there was a roof overhanging him and another half Kezias. We said it doesn't combine together. And we said that Rabbi Yossi would disagree with that because Rabbi Yossi, Abaye's understanding of Rabbi Yossi anyway, was that Oihel, or Rava's understanding of Rabbi Yossi rather, is that Oihel and Negea are the same thing. Rabbi Yossi would consider them to be all the same thing, and therefore based on what we discussed in this whole story. Yeah. So now the question is that obviously then we have another Tana who disagrees with Rabbi Yossi on that, because Rabbi Yossi again would say that if he's touching a half kezias and there's a roof over him and another half kezias, he would be tamei, because that's all considered negeya. Whereas we quoted before a Mishnah from Aulis that says that he won't be tamei. So obviously there's some Tana who disagrees with Rabbi Yossi. Who is that Tana? That's how Rashi explains the question. Tosfos explains the question that Tosfos explains the question that a little bit differently. Before we said that, before we asked which Tana calls Ohel Negea, and we said that would be Rav Yossi, implying there's some other Tana who doesn't call Ohel Negea. So we want to figure out which Tana that is. It's similar, but not identical. But yeah.
What's the difference?
The difference is that we said over there that there's Ohel Baham Shachar. Rav Yossi would agree that there is a concept of, that there's a difference between an Ohel, which is when Ohel created by you overhanging the thing, versus an Ohel created by something else overhanging the thing. We said there that Rav Yossi would hold that distinction. So why would we say all of a sudden that another Tana, that the other Tana disagrees with him? But no, the point is Rav Yossi uses the expression that Rav Yossi was saying uses the expression that we're saying that Rav Yossi calls Ohel, makes certain kinds of Ohel Megea. So the question is who would say otherwise? Okay. So the answer is Rav Shimon. That would be Rav Shimon disagrees with Rav Yossi on that. And we know that, the Tanya, Rav Shimon Omer. Sholosh Tumas Poshes Min HaMeth. There are three kinds of Tumas that can come from a mess. Now, we don't mean, Rashi says, it doesn't mean there's only three kinds of tumas from a mess. There are many, many kinds of tumas from a mess. In fact, Rashi doesn't even list all of them over here. So Rashi lists some of them. You have a kazayas of flesh. You have a whole spine, a whole skull, a quarter calf of bones, a ladle full of rakab, of that decayed stuff that we talked about yesterday, a bone the size of a barley grain. When you have most roiv binyan or roiv minyan, most of the bones in a body, 125 out of 248, or most of the frame of the body, the two leg bones and an arm bone or whatever it is exactly. Anyway, the point is that there are many tumas that come from a mess. But when Rav Shimon uses the expression over here, Sholosh Tumas Poshes Min HaMeth, he means there are three particular ones where each one of them has one type of tumor that doesn't apply, that each one of them doesn't have one type of tumor that applies to the other two. So in other words, he's kind of making a Venn diagram between these three specifically.
Exclusive tumas.
Not exclusive tumas, no. In other words, that each of these three has two out of the three possible ways of becoming tumor with it. But only those two and not the third. Each of these three kinds of tumas that I'm going to focus on, says Rav Shimon, each of them has only two ways you can become tameh with it, not the third, as opposed to most of the other ones. For example, kazayis baser, you could become tameh in any other way. Maga, maser, oil. Same thing with shedra, same thing with gogolos, etc., etc. These three that he's going to focus on, each one of them have two each, but each one has two, has each one, the two that apply to it are different than the other. Three
different combinations.
So, Elohim, Meloy Tavad Rakov, number one, a ladle full of Rakov, of the decayed substance that we talked about yesterday. Number two, Ve'etzim Kesa'ora, a bone from a mess the size of a grain of barley. And number three, the Golol V'Dotek, number three are the Golol and Dotek. So Golol and Dotek we've talked about a number of times before. Rashi over here and in many places explains that the Golol is the lid of the coffin, and the dofek are the side pieces of the coffin. Tosfos, in a number of other places, talks about that the golol is the tombstone, and the dofek is the dofek are the pieces that hold up the tombstone.
It's not
the same at all. One's talking about the coffin, one's talking about the tombstone. No, there's a big difference.
One is they both the top.
Okay, right. We know that the dofek supports the golol. There's no question about that. The question is, what is the golol?
Right.
Basically, yeah. Okay.
It's either a coffin or
it's either a coffin or a gravestone, whatever. Okay. Anyway, so of these three, it's like this: Meloy tavad rakav, a spoonful, a ladle full of rakav, metame b'masov oihel. It can be metame a person if he carries it, or by oihel, him being under an oil with it, or him being an oil over it, or whatever. The ain metame b'maga doesn't make him tame by touching, because as we learned before, you can't touch the whole thing. It's a pile of dust. It's a bunch of separate pieces. Even if you put your hand on it, you're not touching the entire tavad rakav at one time. You can't, because it's separate grain.
Right.
No, not Susan, because it's separate grain. So even if you're touching some of them, you're not touching all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, and that's the point Rashi says. This is where we see that he's disagreeing with Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi before had used the expression that it's metame b'maga, because he used the word maga in the sense of a certain kind of oil, namely where you yourself are the oil. So Rav Shimon is saying, I disagree with that terminology. Maga and oil are two separate things. If you are overshadowing that, if you are overhanging over that Maloy Tavid Rakov, sure, you're Tomei, but that's because of Oihel, nothing to do with MAGA. Don't call it MAGA because MAGA does not apply to Maloy Tavid Rakov. Okay, that's number one.
Unless you touch it.
No, even if you touch it, because you're not touching the whole thing at once. So the only way to become Tomei from Rakov are by carrying it or by Oihel.
But they're in contact with each other.
Doesn't matter. Okay. Number two, the heichan magoi im achas mehem. So where do you have the case where a person would become tomei from tumas maga? Only with one of the other two. A person can't become tomei tumas maga if Rav Shimon is telling us from rochel. And he said essentially Rav Yossi agrees with that concept. He just disagrees with the terminology he would call where you are an oihel over it. He would call that maga. Rav Shimon is disagreeing with Rav Yossi on that terminology.
He would call it oihel.
He would call it oihel. Okay. Number two. Essen to sa'ora matame mago master, a bone the size of a grain of barley, can be matame a person by touching or carrying it. The ain't a matame oil, it does not make him tome if he is under an oil with it. Rashi says it's halacha l'moshe mitzinai. Tosfos says that actually we learn it from a pasuk, in which case by definition it's not halacha l'moshe mitzinai, because halacha l'moshe mitzinai is where you don't learn it from a pasuk. But whatever it is, it's a basic accepted din that an esem kisaora is matame only mago master and not matame oil. The heichan oholoi, so where do you have a case where a person would be tome tumas oil in ma'achas mehen? Again, only with one of the other two, not with this one.
So
the Maloy Tavid Rakov has two out of the three. In the Venn diagram, it has two out of the three. It has Masa and it has Oil, but it does not have Maga. Etzim Kesa'ora has Maga and Masa, but not Oil. And now the third one is Golol and Dofik, Matame b'Maga of Oil. A Golol and Dofik are Matame if you touch them, or with an Oil, where again, where you're an Oil over them, or they're an Oil over you, or you're together under an Oil, whatever. They ain't a matame of a mass, so they're not matame by carrying them. Rashi says actually that one possibility is we learned that from Alok Lamishu Sinai. There's a concept of Tumas Gerl of a Joyfik. We had a machlokas over there, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kippur, whether you learn it from a Pasuk or whether it's Alok Lamishu Sinai. If you learn it from a Pasuk, then fine. The Pasuk only mentions touching it or being under an oil with it, therefore Masa is excluded. If you learn it Alok Lamishu Sinai, Rashi says, I don't know how we know that it does, that Tumas Masa doesn't apply to it. Anyway, Tosfos actually says the other way around. If you say that it's halacha, okay, the halacha l'mishmi sinai was that it's only maga and oihel, but not masa. But if you say you're learning from a pasuk, then where's the meal? Okay, the point is anyway. But them's the fact though. It's only matam of mago oil, but ain't matam of masa. Golol and dofik are not matam of masa. The heichan masoi. So what's the case where a person will be tomei from carrying something of a mess im echad mehen only with one of the other two. So now our Venn diagram is complete. Each one of them has two out of the three, but is missing the third. Okay. Fine. The point is, though, that we see from that Rav Shimon disagrees with Rav Yossi. Rav Shimon says there's no such thing as oihel, which is also called maga, and there's no difference between the different types of oihel. All of them have the same din, whether you are the oihel, whether the other thing is the oihel, or whether you have a third party thing. Those are the three ways of making an oil. Everybody agrees that there are three ways of making an oil. We're just saying that Rav Yossi calls some of those ways, where you, in particular, the one where you are the oil, where you yourself are the oil, he calls it maga. Rav Shimon is saying, no, all of them fall under the category of oil. Okay, fine. Then we said in the Mishnah, kolos nevela v'kolos hasheretz v'chola. We said that if you have a bone from a sheretz or from a nevela, where we said if the bone is still intact, there's no hole in it, then even if there's marrow inside the bone, you don't become tomei by touching it, because you can't reach the marrow. But if there's a hole in it, then you become tomei b'mago master. Now, how do we know this? Tanan abanan, we learn in a brisa. The pasuk says b'niv losa. If a person touches the nevela of an animal, meaning v'loy b'kul is stumas, so it doesn't apply to a sealed bone.
How do we know b'niv losa?
Because b'niv losa implies that you're able to touch the nevela. The bone itself is not going to... Yeah, it means that you have to be able to touch the actual parts that are considered nevela. The bones are not considered nevela. Yeah. Yochol afu nikvas. You would think the same thing applies, that even if the bone has a hole in it, he shouldn't be tomei. No, tamad lema hanegeya yitma. No, because the pasuk says anyone who touches it becomes tomei. We're learning, Rashi says, we're learning from the extra yud. It could have said hanegeya tomei. Instead it says yitma, he will be tomei, implying we're talking even when there's only a hypothetical possibility. Esha efsha liga, when you're able to touch it, when you, in other words, there's a hole in it, so even if you didn't actually touch it, then you still have the bone now which functions as a shomer, and therefore tomei, therefore it becomes tomei by touching the bone. The SGE actually got, but where it's impossible to touch the contents of it, toher, then he stays toher. Right. Omelet of
the tumor spreads out to the bone?
No. If there's a hole in the bone. Yeah, because then the bone is a shomer. The only reason it's not a shomer when it's sealed is because you can't touch the marrow inside.
One second. I know the bone is a shomer, but where does the tumor affect the touching? Through the bone or through the...
I don't understand what you're asking. No. That's the point. Even if you don't touch the hole, once you have a hole, any part of the bone that you touch, you're going to become tumor.
That I understand.
Okay.
I'm asking how.
What do you mean how? The fact of the matter.
The tumor comes through the hole.
It doesn't really matter. The point is that once you're able to touch the contents of the bone, namely the marrow, then that bone now is considered a shomer.
Even if you don't touch it.
Even if you don't touch the actual hole, you just touch the bone. Exactly.
It's as if you threw.
Exactly. Yeah. Because now the bone is a shomer. Exactly. Omelet of Zeta Labayas, I Reb Zeta Astabaya, Elamayasa, by that logic, if you're telling me that something that has, that doesn't have holes in it, is not considered a shomer, Behema Ba'ura Loitatame, then a dead animal that still has its skin on it shouldn't be Matame, because the skin is, the skin doesn't have a hole. I mean, the skin has microscopic holes, maybe fine, but, microscopic we're not considering. If you're going to look like that, a bone also has, but that's, the point still remains. The bone has microscopic holes, and we still ignore them. A skin also has microscopic holes. Why are we not ignoring them? Why are we saying that the skin is considered a shomer? Okay. Basically, a skin doesn't have holes. There's a reason why they use skins, and that's the point. In other words, so shouldn't it be like a bone? As long as the skin
has holes.
Okay. A bone has microscopic holes. A skin also has microscopic holes. If you're telling me that a sealed bone, we ignore the microscopic holes, we should do the same thing with a skin. And therefore, we should say that...
Assuming the skin does have them.
Okay, obviously the skin has microscopic holes, but so does a bone. And if the bone is considered sealed, the skin should also be considered sealed. The answer is, Abaya says, okay, pokhozi, come into cover, Yeshua. Okay, but consider how many holes there are in the animal as it is. It has a mouth, it has nostrils, it has eyes. So you have natural large size holes in there anyway, as opposed to a bone. Okay. I'm going to let a popular rubber. So the popular says to rubber, okay, well, let's take another possibility, Elamea. So by this logic, if you're saying that you ignore microscopic holes, if you have a kidney from a nevela that's covered by fat, it shouldn't be matame, a person who touches it. Because again, fat is not considered part of the nevela for this purpose. The fat that surrounds the kidney. Yeah. So again, you can't touch the kidney itself because it's surrounded by fat. And yet the fact of the matter, it is.
But if you touch the fat?
If you touch the fat, why are you telling me? And the answer is, tochazi kama chutim nimshachin hemena. The answer is, Rava tells him, but go look and see how many threads, how many blood vessels or other such things go through the fat, and those are considered flesh. So therefore, yeah, you're telling me when you touch the outside of the fat, because inevitably you're touching those chutim, you're touching those fibers and those fibers and blood vessels and tubes and whatever that come out of the kidney and go through the fat.
And they're considered flesh.
They're considered flesh, yeah. So therefore you have flesh on the outside. Interesting point that the Lev Aryeh, I think it is, says, why does Abaya use the expression puk chazi and Rava uses the expression tochazi? Puk chazi means literally go out and see. Tochazi means come and see. The answer is, he says, because the first part about the holes, about the eyes and nose and mouth and whatever of the animal is a very obvious thing. You can go out, look at any dead animal, and you'll see them for yourself. As opposed to a kolya b'chalava, you have to check it more carefully. It's not an immediately obvious thing. When you have a thing of fat over there with a kidney inside, it's not an immediately obvious thing to realize that you have chutim over there. So he says to him, come, I'll show you. I have a kolya b'chalava, and I can show you. Okay. All right. Now Rabbi Oshia asked the question like this. What would be the din if the person, so he has this bone from a nevela with marrow inside. We said that as long as the bone is intact, has no holes in it, then it doesn't become tummy from touching or carrying it. What if he thought about piercing the bone to get out the marrow, let's say, below nikra, but he didn't actually pierce it yet? Mahu, what would he do? Would we say, because we could argue, maybe it's machshava. Mechusim nekiva k'mechusim ma'isa jami oloi. The fact that he didn't yet make the hole, is that considered that there's still a significant ma'isa missing, and therefore it's not matame? Oloi, or maybe not. Maybe making that hole is a very minor ma'isa, and therefore it doesn't prevent the bone from already being matame.
If
One second. Yeah, similar. Harder, the answer is harder posture. Later on, after the Moshe asked the question, he was able to answer it. Yes, mechutzim b'kiva lavka mechutzim ma'isa domi. Not having a hole is not considered mechutzim ma'isa. In effect, we consider as though the hole was already made. And we consider, and therefore, once you have a machshava, then already the bone will be retained. Now, the Rambam actually paskins that this case is a sopik. So how does the Rambam get that it's a sopik? If Rav Oshi answered the question over here. So the Kesef Mishnah says, evidently the Rambam had another girsa. Then the Kesef Mishnah brings from Rav Yosef Korkus, one of the earliest Mekorishim on the Rambam, who says that, no, maybe what it is there are other Gemaras, in particular, there's one in Zvachim that talks about a similar concept where you have a minor Maisa missing, Mechusa Yitzir, Mechusa Maisa Dami, and the Gemara comes to the opposite conclusion over there, that it is considered Mechusa Maisa. So maybe for that reason, the Rambam wasn't sure, is that, you know, you have that Gemara in Zvachim that implies that it's not, you have that it is Mechusa Maisa, you have R that implies that it's not, and therefore the Rambam writes that it's a suffix.
Okay. That's why you consider it.
So that's why because you have two different Gemaras that possibly contradict each other. That's how Maori Corpus says it. Okay, fine. Mishnah says, Beit ha-sasheret hamrukemes. If you have an egg from a sheret, keep in mind again the shrotim are we mentioned before. The shrotim are not in any one order according to modern biology. They belong to many different orders. Some of them are amphibians, some of them are mammals, some of them are reptiles, etc. And some of them lay eggs. So the ones that lay eggs, if you have an egg from a sheret hamurukemes, where you already have a formed embryo in it, you know, a recognizable embryo, then tahora. So now as long as the egg is intact. Then again, a person who touches not the fact, the egg itself, the shell of the egg. The shell of the egg is still intact. Tahora, then again, a person who touches it or carries it is tahor for the same reason as the bone in the previous Mishnah, because you can't touch the embryo that's inside it.
But then we just said that
we talked about bones, now we're talking about you didn't plan to make a hole in it. You know, you're not planning
to make a hole.
If you plan to make a hole, that would be different. We're not talking about that. We're talking about there was no plan to make a hole in it. Nikva kol shehu, but again, like in the previous Mishnah, if it has even a small hole, even just a hole big enough to get a hair into there, tomei, then he's tomei. If he touches or carries it, for the same reason, because now you're able to have tumas maga, and therefore you have tumas maga. Mishnah continues. Achbar shechetzie boser v'chetzie adama, a mouse that is half flesh and half dirt. What does that mean? Let's finish the Mishnah and then we'll talk about. Hanegeya b'boso tomei. If a person touches the flesh part of it, he's tomei. Ba'adama tohor. But if he touches the dirt part of it, then he's tohor because the dirt is not part of the animal. Rabbi Yehud, obviously, we'd have to be talking about that the animal is dead because the kashrotim are not matame while they're alive. Rabbi Yisai, we're trying to learn over here. Rabbi Yehud, afanegeya ba'adama shekinegeya b'boso tomei. Rabbi Yehuda says that even if you touch that it's not. Rabbi Yehuda says that if you touch the flesh, not the flesh, if you touch the dirt, which is sheknegad abaso, which is opposite the flesh, like it's right next to the flesh, tomei, then he's also tomei, says Rabbi Yehuda, because that part is about to turn into flesh, basically. Now, what are we talking about? How do you have a mouse that comes from the dirt? The Rashi starts by saying, yeah, you have a certain kind of mice that are not part of a robber. They're not born from a male and female. They're spontaneously generated from the dirt. So if you only have one side, the right side or the left side has been formed, and the other side not, then many. Okay, so now what are we talking about? So the Rambam, for example, mentions, the Rambam says that people have wondered, like, what kind of thing are we talking about? Yeah, and the Rambam says that actually many people have told me that they've seen such creatures. So later on, it's obviously some kind of creature that lives in the ground. I mean, here we're calling it achbar, which means a mouse. But okay, anyway. So the Rambam says that reliable people have told him such things exist. So one possibility, of course, is there really is such a thing, or maybe there was. It might be that now it's extinct or whatever. With the further development of science, eventually there came the point when scientists decided there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. So one possibility is we do have to take them at their word. We do have to take that as being correct. and therefore maybe, and then therefore they talk about various possible ways of reinterpreting the case over here, one of them being maybe that we're talking about a certain kind of animal, maybe not necessarily a mole, but because some were familiar enough with moles to know what their habits are, but other kinds of creatures, and the Paris Israel brings from us from a naturalist of his time, a fellow named Link, who identifies this creature of our mission as a creature called a jerboa. It's a desert rat. It's a little kind of rat that lives in the desert. It's a jumping rat. Yeah, they live in Egypt. They live in Egypt, and you have the hindquarters of them are often covered with dirt, and therefore it can look like they came from the dirt or something, whatever. But okay, anyway, so you have there are possibilities they talk about like that. But you also have you have the possibility that there really are such creatures, and just because modern science doesn't know about them doesn't mean anything. In fact, I saw somebody points out, you have scientists nowadays. On the one hand, they want to say there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. On the other hand, they claim, where does life come from on Earth in the first place? Spontaneous generation. So they themselves can't even make up their mind.
Well, they found recently that actually genes can be created from scratch.
Yeah, that's fine, but that's not the same thing as creating life from scratch. So, okay. With all that said, I've mentioned before there's a letter from Rav Shamshon Nathal Hirsch where he says basically it doesn't really matter whether such a creature exists or not. The Chachamim were told by the naturalists of their time that such creatures exist. So, they have to talk about the halachas of them, the same way as we would do if we were told, the same way as, if we were told by modern day scientists that a certain creature exists, we would start talking about the halachas of it without actually getting on a plane and going over there and looking if it exists or not. So basically that's his point. But again, you have various places where it ever addresses this idea, and not exactly the Shamshon Nathal Hirsch's idea, but similar ideas, and says that not necessarily do we have to say that the scientists always have the last word on anything. There may well be spontaneous generation that they don't know about. Okay, anyway, that's what it is. So those are the dinim that the Mishnah says. Okay, Tananabanan, we learn in a Braisa. How do we know this din that we mention in the previous Mishnah about the bone of a sheretz and in our Mishnah about the egg of a sheretz? So the pasuk says hatmeim, that ela hatmeim lachem b'chol sheretz. So the hay is extra. So therefore, we use it for a variety of drashas. One of them, we used it before to learn that the juice of shrotzim is osur, also that the skin of certain shrotzim is like their flesh. Now we're using it over here to say that the egg of a sheretz, or l'rabbis, basis hasheretz, b'chol hasheretz, it comes to include the egg or the bone of a sheretz. That if they have marrow in them, or in the case of the egg, if they have an embryo in them, then they're metame. Yachol afilu lo rikma. So in that case, you would think that the egg is metame, even if you don't yet have a formed embryo in there. No, tamad by mahasheret. No, therefore the pasuk says zosheret elas meim lachem b'chol asheret masheret shurikim. An actual sheret is obviously formed. Because it's a living creature, or now it's dead, but whatever. Af beis hasheretz shurikma, so the same thing. The egg of a sheretz, to be metame, has to have something inside it that's formed. Has to have an embryo inside of it.
It has to be something.
Yes. Yachol afilu l'nikvu, then you would think that the bone or the egg is metame, even if there's no hole in it. No, tamadloy mahanegeya, therefore, like we had in the previous Mishnah, hanegeya yitma, only one who touches becomes tame. Esh liga tame, only if it's possible to touch with the contents do you become tame. Esh esh liga tame, if it's impossible to touch it, because it's sealed shut. So there has to be a hole, right? So if it's sealed shut, then it's tame. But kama nikivasa, what's the minimum size hole that would make that you'd be tame?
The
would be a hair's width. Because conceivably you could then touch it with a hair. And Rashi brings over here, so we mentioned this the other day, but Rashi brings over here that a person is able to become Tomei, a person is able to become Tomei, and a Tomei person is able to transmit Truma to other people using their hair or using their fingernails also. So meaning, in other words, for example, if you have, let's say, a Zov, and he has hair, and you touch a hair from his head, you're going to become Tomei, and vice versa. If a person who's Tahor touches a source of Tumah with his hair, he's going to become Tomei. So that's what it is over here with this egg or with this bone, that conceivably he could take a hair from his head attached to his head or to his beard and thread it through the hole over there and touch the inside there for you. Okay. Actually, because you're able to touch with even a hair's width. Then we said ach b'shechetzi v'chola. We said that this mouse that's half flesh and half earth. So we said that only the flesh part is metame, and Rabbi Yehuda says also the dirt part that's adjacent to the flesh. And by the way, the Rambam, uncharacteristically over here in Pirush HaMishnayos, does not mention who the halacha is like, which leads a number of Mepharshim to say that evidently the Rambam holds that Rabbi Yehuda is not necessarily disagreeing with the Tanakhama, he's clarifying what the Tanakhama says.
Because otherwise
the Rambam should have said the halacha is like the Chachamim, or the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, whatever. Okay. So Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Ruhu Shehishritz Alpnei Kolay. This din that the flesh part is metame and the dirt part is not metame would only apply if it's formed along its whole length. In other words, if this is the mouth over here, so you have to have, in other words, that one complete side of it from head to tail has been formed, and then the other side hasn't been formed yet. Otherwise, Rabbi Shor ben Levi is saying, even if you only have, let's say, from head to mid to the middle of the body or whatever has been formed yet, then it wouldn't be metame yet.
So the whole length of it,
you have to have the whole length, not the whole width, but you have to have the whole length has to be already created. Ika de Masnila Sefer, there are those who learn Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's statement as referring to the Sefer, where the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yehuda ima afa negeya ba'adama shekneged basar tameh, that Rabbi Yehuda is saying also a person who touches the dirt adjacent to the flesh is tameh. On that, in the second version, Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi, v'hushe hishkatap nekolai, only if you have the full length of the animal has been formed on the other side. So, man de masnila reisha, the version that says that Rabbi Shor ben Levi is referring to the reisha, kol shekein ha-sefer, he would say, how much more so that it refers to the sefer, to Rabbi Yehuda, in other words, the Tanakhama would be saying that only if you have a full length, only then is the flesh tamei, and Rabbi Yehuda would be adding that also only if you have a full length, only then is the dirt that's adjacent to that would be tamei. But if you have less than that, then they would both say, the Chachamim would say the flesh is not tamei, and Rabbi Yehuda would say the dirt is not tamei. Uman de masnila sefer, but the version that refers what Rabbi Shor ben Levi is saying to the sefer, they would say, avo reisha afagav dele hishrit. They would say that, no, in the reisha, Rabbi Shor ben Levi would not necessarily be limiting the Chachamim's din to where the full length of the mouth exists already. He would say that as long as any part of it exists that's flesh already, then that part is metame. And then he would be saying, only Rabbi Yehuda, then he would be saying, only Rabbi Yehuda is saying, when do you say that the dirt is metame only if you have a full length? Yeah. Okay.
So two interpretations, according one to the Sefer and one to the Reish.
Right. So, and then there's a second one. First of all, the second one is more machmer. The second version is more machmer, because it implies that the Tanakhama is saying, as long as you have any part formed of it, the actual part that's formed is metame. And that, plus the fact that in many cases we usually go according to the second lashon in the Gemara, that's actually the halacha there for you. By the way, this creature over here, this achva shechetzia bosa v'chetzia adama, is mentioned in the Gemara in another connection. Also, you have in Sanhedrin, the Gemara brings it as an illustration of tchiyas hameisim. The same way as you have this mouth is able to regenerate or to generate from dirt, the same way the mason can come alive again from
flesh.
Well, in other words, the point is Hashem can regenerate them from the dirt and they'll come alive. Obviously, but this way.
No.
It doesn't mean that the mason are going to look like that. It means, in other words, that the same way as you see that the expression in the Gemara over there is you go into the field and one day you see these things are like half formed and half clods of dirt, and the next day you see they're fully formed. The same, so you can understand that dirt can form into a living creature. The same way the dirt can reform into living creatures of chesed mason.
The point is, once
you have an illustration of it in day-to-day life, then already it makes it more real to you. Now, one of the eight shrotim that it mentions in the Pasuk, so it mentions the Achbar, so you would think, Maybe when the Torah tells us that dead Shmona Shrotim Amitame, maybe it means even the mouse of the sea, Shmoy Achbar, because it's called mouse. What is it? I don't know. It's some kind of fish that resembles a mouse. And then the name for it in Hebrew is Achbar Hayom. What it is in modern terms, I have no idea. Anyway, but you would argue like this. the dinhu. No, I would contradict that. I would contradict that without needing an explicit pasuk. I could show logically that that's not so. Timei becholda, because the pasuk tells us that becholda, the same thing, masculine, feminine forms, is tomei. It's the first one on the list. The timei be'achbar, and the Torah also tells us that be'achbar is tomei. Now, ma cholda min hagadol al aretz, just like the cholda only grows on land, because as the Gemara is going to say soon, every creature that you have on land, you have something similar in the water, except for the cholda. A cholda is different explanations. It's in various places, in various Meforshim, Rashi translates it as a marken, other Rishonim translate it as a weasel or a ferret or different creatures like that. Whatever, some kind of small rodent like that, yeah. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara says later that every creature that you have on land, you have in the sea, except for the cholda. So therefore, when the Torah tells us the cholda is ma cholda min hagadol aretz, the cholda only grows on the ground because there's no cholda in the sea. Ach, min hagadol aretz. Therefore, a hekesh would tell us, therefore, that the mouse that the Torah is talking about is also a land mouse and not a sea mouse. So automatically, that way, we would know that the sea mouse is not metamic. However, we would know that by drawing an analogy between the cholda and the achor. So therefore, that would tell us the analogy is that they're both mentioned in the pasuk together. Achor le va'achor va'tzav le minu.
And since one is not in the sea?
Since one is by definition not in the sea, then the other one oy klach l'derech zu, but continues the b'raisa, maybe you should go in a different direction. Tumei b'cholda v'tumei b'achor. The pasuk is telling us that a cholda is tomei. The pasuk is telling us that an achor is tomei. Now, you should argue like this. Ma cholda kol shashma cholda. What is tomei under the definition of cholda? Any creature which is called cholda. Okay, so happens that there's none in the sea, but still, any creature that would be called cholda is tomei. Af achor kol shashma achor. By that logic, you should argue anything that's called achor would be tomei, meaning afiva achor shabayam shashma achor. Therefore, it would end up including the sea mouse, because it is called an achor.
If there is.
There is, because we know the Gemara tells us later, everything that you have on the dry land you have in the sea except for the cholda. And our braisa is saying, how do you know? Apparently there was a known kind of creature or a known kind of fish to them that was called achbar hayom, and we want to know how we know that's not the tamid. So on the one hand, okay, so again, the argument goes like this. On the one hand, we're thinking to learn from the fact that a cholda is only on dry land. Therefore, the shirasim are only ones that are on dry land. But now we're arguing, maybe the definition should go as follows. Anything called cholda is tomei as a cholda. So anything called achbar is called tomei as an achbar, whether it's on land or on sea. Therefore, we need a pasuk to tell us otherwise, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to break the deadlock. Talmud Leimer al ha'aretz. Therefore, the pasuk says that these are the ones that are tomei from the sheref hasheref al ha'aretz, making it clear that it's only on the land. Okay, e al ha'aretz. So now that we have those words al ha'aretz, yachol al ha'aretz yitma yorad layam lo yitame, then maybe you would think, maybe it's not talking about species, maybe it's talking about where the creature is right now. If you have a land mouse, when it's on land and it's dead and you touch it, you become tomei. But if that dead mouse were to fall into the sea, you wouldn't be tomei when you touch it. How do we know, in other words, that it's limiting what species the tumah applies to? Maybe it limits where the tumah applies. Yeah. No, Talmud Lomar, hashoret. No, therefore the pasuk also mentions the word hashoret, which means that crawls or creeps around, and it's in, kol makom shashoret. So whatever it crawls and moves around, meaning even in the water. If a mouse falls into the water, it will move around in there. So therefore, it can still be called hasheret. In other words, the point is, Rashi says the word hasheret is extra. Because once it says hasheret, automatically we know what does a sheret do? It's sheret. So the word sheret teaches sheret means that it creeps around. Creeps or crawls or moves. Yeah, generally it means close to the ground. But the point is, in other words, it means that it moves. So therefore, and in the water, it can also do that. So far that would mean kol makom shasheret. So this creature that lives on land, wherever it's able to be shasheret, even if right now it happens to be the water, then it's still metamic. Oy eina ela hasheret kol amashrit yitma shein mashrit lo yitma. Maybe though you could still argue, maybe the word shasheret teaches us something else, that only a creature that produces other ones that are shasheret. The word shoreth can also mean to swarm, as in like poru vayishrithu by the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. It can mean to produce swarms, to produce swarms. Yeah. So therefore, kolam mashwit yitma. So maybe we would learn from that that only creatures that reproduce from male and female are mekame. She'ein mashrit lo yitma. Ones that don't reproduce from male and female should not be mekame. Oitzi achbo shechetiyet boster v'chetiyet adama she'ein part of a rava. So maybe in that case, based on that, maybe we should understand that this mouse that we talked about in our Mishnah, that which doesn't reproduce itself, it spontaneously generated from the ground. Or again, you have to realize, again, we do have to realize, even if such a creature may come from a microscopic egg, again, microscopic things don't have any standing in halacha. So even if they actually come from a microscopic egg, and maybe that's another way of reconciling it with the scientific idea about spontaneous generation, maybe they come from a microscopic egg. So fine, halacha doesn't consider that anything. So as far as halacha is concerned, it's spontaneously generated. But scientifically, it would be. The point is. So if we're going to say, if we can argue that maybe the word shoret means that to be metame, the animal has to reproduce from male and female in a way that's visible to us. Therefore, so that would exclude this half-flesh, half-dirt mouse, she'ain part of a rava, which does not reproduce sexually. So how do we know not? So like this, again, the dinhu, we're going to show logically that that can't be the case. Again, as we said before, the Torah tells us that a chulda is metame. The Torah tells us that an achbar is metame. Ma chulda kol shashma chulda. So now we are going to use the logic that we used before. But the name, just like the word chulda includes anything that's called chulda, is metame as a chulda. Af achbar kol shashma achbar. Therefore, when you go to the achbar, anything that's called achbar. Now the Gemara is going to soon ask. Then we're back to the question: how do we know that the achbar shabayam is not metame? So we'll get to that. But first, let's finish the braita. So anything that's called achbar is considered an achbar. Obi achbar shechetiyah b'asav chetiyah adama. Therefore, we have to include this half flesh, half dirt mouse because it's called mouse.
It's called achbar.
Oi klach l'derech zu, but you're going to go say maybe you should go in another direction. Ma chulda part of a rava, just like a chulda reproduces from male and female. Af achbar part of a rava, so maybe a mouse is only metame if it reproduces from male and female, and this particular achbar does not. Therefore, so again, we have a deadlock. We have two possible ways of figuring it out logically. So we need a pasuk to break the deadlock. Therefore, tamabayim abasher. Therefore, the pasuk says, among the sheretz. And that is an extra pasuk, because it already says, elat mei macham b'chol sheretz, a few pasukim later. So here, when it introduces the list, it didn't have to say the word basheret. So therefore, that comes to teach us that anything that is a sheret, whether it reproduces from male and female or not, can be metame,
including
the achbar, the half flesh, half mouse.
Okay.
So the zelochem hatome basheret hasheret al haaretz. So we're saying basheret teaches us any sheret. Hasheret teaches us as long as it moves around, even if it's out of its natural element in the water. And al haaretz means that it actually has to live on land. So the question is, now that we finished the braisa, the so one of the chachamim asks the rava, Ema, maybe you should understand the words in the pasuk differently. Maybe the word basheret comes to include the half flesh, half dirt mouse. Fine, hasheret kolshu sheret, and then the word hasheret would mean anything that produces young, meaning vafilo achva shabayam. So it would include the sea mouse.
It would include
the half flesh, half mouse, because that's basheret. It would include the achbar shabayam because it's sheret. And what about the imishum al ha'aretz? And you're going to say, what are you doing with the words al ha'aretz? That would mean al ha'aretz yitame yerd layam yorda layam layitame. We would say, like we argued before, that it means that the land mouse is only matame when it's on the land, but not when it goes into the sea. In other words, again, so far what we're saying is like this: basheret, we're saying, means the half flesh, half dirt mouse. Hasheretz means as long as it moves around, even if it's not in its natural element. Al ha'aretz means that it has to live on land. So now, Ahumei Rabbanan is arguing, maybe flip around some of those. Basheretz, fine, means the chet yibosa, the chet yadama. Hasheretz means anything that produces young, which therefore would also include the achbar shabayam. Al ha'aretz would mean if you have a land mouse that falls into the ocean, then it's not matana. So maybe it's like that. Yeah. Amalei. So Rava says, and that wouldn't work because once you're telling me that the sea is a place where you're able to have a tomate species, because if you're arguing that the Achla Shabayam should be included, Mali Hocha, then what's the difference? Whether you would have a land mouse that fell into the sea or a sea mouse that lives there in its natural element, once you're accepting the idea that the sea can have a tomate creature in it, a creature that can be the time of you, then it wouldn't matter whether we're talking about one that naturally lives there or one that fell in there. So therefore, the only logical thing to do is to learn the way we said, that the sea mouse is excluded. Al ha'aretz means it has to live on land. But ha'shoretz just means that if you took a land mouse and threw it into the sea and it's able to move around in there, then it's still metame. Yeah.
Only if it doesn't move around.
Well, only if it was a land animal is able to move. I mean, again, it's only the time it went dead, so that's not moving around anyway. But the point is, while it was alive, it was able to. While it was alive, it was able to move around. Okay. So the question is, what are you telling me that we're able to learn from the word al ha'aretz that the shrotsim have to be creatures that actually live on the land? We use those words al ha'aretz for a different drasha. That if you have a suffix of floating tumma, namely, so Rashi describes the case. It's described in the Sefer Nazir. Suppose you have a dead sheret floating on the water, which you're not sure if you touched it or not. Usually, we would say the usual rule would tell us that a safek tuma b'rishus harabim is tahor and a safek tuma b'rishus hayachid is tameh. Here, we would say, regardless whether he's in rishus hayachid or whether he's in rishus harabim, he's tahor. So the question is, that was Rava's answer to the Ahu Me'aban, that you told me that the sea is a place of trauma, so therefore, because you're arguing that Achla Shabayam should be Tomei, so therefore there'd be no difference whether you threw a mouse in there or not. No, now we're saying something else. The words al ha'aretz come to teach us that if you have a sophic, whether you touch a floating trauma, then you're tahor, because you're only Tomei if there was a trauma sophic al ha'aretz on the ground. So we're using the words al ha'aretz for that drill. So how do we have it available to teach us that where the animal lives? The answer is tauti al ha'aretz. The answer is twice in those psukim it says al ha'aretz. So therefore we use one of them for one drasha and the other one for the other drasha. Okay. Turn it up on. We learn in a brisa. Let's talk more about the shrotim, about the shemona shrotim. We mentioned the cholad, we mentioned the achbar. The next one in the pasuk is hatsav l'minehu. It says the tsav according to its kind. The tsav, there's different possibilities. A tsav may be a turtle or a tortoise, or maybe Rashi on the pasuk translates something I think as a toad. Anyway, whatever it is, some kind of reptile or amphibian or something. Yeah. So the word l'minehu l'havi ha'aroid. The word l'minehu over there, which means that the subspecies of it, also comes to include the aroid, which the Gemara tells us later that an aroid is a crossbreed between a snake and a turtle, between a snake and a sub, whatever a sub is, and it's a very dangerous creature. There are various places where the Gemara talks about that an aroid's bite is fatal. So it's some kind of venomous snake. It's some kind of venomous snake, and it comes about, as the Gemara says later, as a crossbreed between a snake and a sub.
A
tsav is, again, he said it could be a turtle, it could be a toad. There are various kinds of toads that have poison glands, and there are various kinds of
crossbreed between a toad and a...
That's what we're going to talk about later, how such a thing is possible, but that's what it is. Okay. Shittim Kubesis, by the way, punctuates the word, and not aroid, but rather arvad, because you actually have, there's other places where the Gemara uses the word aroid, which to mean a wild donkey. Over here, obviously, we don't mean that, because that's not a sheriff. So therefore, in other words, the Shittim HaKubetzis explains the difference in pronunciation. The wild donkey is called Aroid. This creature, this viper, or whatever, is called Arvad. Anyway, so the word Leminehu comes to include that. V'chein ha'nefilin, or ven ha'nefilin, v'salamandra. And the same thing also applies to the nefilin, which is some other kind of creature similar to a sub, and a salamandra. And a salamandra and a salamander. This nephilim in the shiurim ba'agadas chazal that we have in the large shul over here, he thinks maybe nephilim refers to dinosaurs. Because nephilim, we know in the pasuk, means giant creatures, so maybe conceivably. Okay, anyway. The salamandra and a salamander, which Rashi describes over here and in various other places, that it's a sheret that's created from fire. You make a fire out of hadassim branches using kishuf, and the salamander is formed in that, And the point is that, and the point that Rashi says also, that this salamandra has the property that if you smear its blood on your skin, it makes you fireproof. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that Ochaz, one of the wicked kings of Yehuda, he worshipped many Avodah Zarah, including also, as the pasuk says, he took his children through the fire of Heber's Bnei Lamolach. He passed his children through the fire to Molach. So the person is chayav mitzvah for that, yeah. But he was a Rosh, he did that. So now the question is, if he passed his son, the Gemara assumes over there that passing his son through the fire is necessarily going to kill him. So the question is, then how did Chizkiyahu survive it? Because he became the next king. Yeah. And the Gemara says over there, because his mother took the salamandra blood and smeared him with it.
Yeah. Okay. Who was his mother?
The pasuk names are Avi Bas Zachariah, but we don't know anything else about her other than her name. Okay, anyway. So again, the word Hatsavlam Nehu includes the Arvad, as we said before, and the Nephilim and the Salamandra. When Rabbi Akiva would reach this pasuk and is learning this pasuk that mentions these creatures, he used to say, Moravu Masecha Hashem, how many are your works, Hashem? How wonderful are your works, Hashem? Consider all the different kinds of creatures that Hashem made. Yesh l'chabriyas g'delus v'yam. You have creatures that live in the sea. Yesh l'chabriyas g'delus v'yabosha. And you have creatures similar to them that live on the land. Shabayam ilmole olus v'yaboshem yadmesis. The ones that live in the sea, in the water, if they were to come on dry land, they'd right away die. Shabi yaboshe ilmole yodus v'yam yadmesis. And the ones that live on dry land, if they go into the sea, they would immediately die. And similarly, yesh l'chabriyat g'delus v'ur. You have creatures that grow in fire, like the salamandra. V'yesh l'chabriyat g'delus v'aver. And you have other ones that grow in the air. And Marsha points out, we have over here all four, we have here now all four elements, earth, fire, air, and water, I mentioned over here, right over here. And the same thing, the ones that grow and develop in the fire, if they were to go into the air, they would die right away. The ones that are in the air, if they were to go into the fire, they would immediately die. Therefore, Marav Masech Hashem. So, how many are your works, are your accomplishments, Hashem, that you're able to make so many different kinds of creatures, and each one is uniquely different than the other one?
Do we have these creatures that live in the fire?
Well, do we have the salamander nowadays? Not that I know of. I mean, we have salamanders, but they don't necessarily have the same properties as the ones of the Gemara. Okay, I don't know, maybe. Famous expression. Anything that lives on the dry land, you also have something similar that lives in the sea. Chus min acholda, except for the cholda. That's what we said before. That's what we know for a fact, that the cholda is only a land animal. Amar Rav Zeira, Maikra hazinu kol yoshvei cholid. So Rav Zeira says, what's the pasuk that expresses that idea? The pasuk in Tehillim that says, listen, all of you who live in cholid. So cholid means the earth. Why is the earth called Choled? Because the only place where the Cholda lives. Now, what's the deeper idea behind it? First of all, in Chassidus, in many places, it talks about the idea that the land is Alma Des Galia, the revealed world, where creatures that live on land, including human beings, including animals or whatever, they live on the land, but they're not attached to it. They don't have to be on the land the whole time. People can go in airplanes, for example. As opposed to, you have Alma Des Galia. Well, but they can swim for a little while. But the point is, for example, that as opposed to the creatures that are Alma Des Gafia, the ones that live in the hidden world, like the fish and the various other sea creatures, you take them out of the water for a short time, they die. They have to live in their element. So therefore, the land creatures therefore represent the levels of existence that don't necessarily recognize of course all the time. And the ones in the sea represent the ones in the higher worlds, and the malachim, etc., who are conscious of that Alakos exists, and that they couldn't survive without it, that they wouldn't exist without it.
Why? Because
Amadis Kassia, because they're the hidden worlds. Because the point is, they know they have to be in their element. The same way as those the malachim, for example, know they there has to be a world of Alakos, otherwise they couldn't survive, otherwise they wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
What do you mean? I don't know. Because
the fish live in the world.
Okay. The point is that the fish metaphorically represent the creatures. Metaphorically represent the creatures that live on that higher level. That they know what element they live in and that they can't live without that element, as opposed to us, where we don't have that. Yeah, yeah. So therefore,
you take us
out of it. Yeah, yeah. So, but also the point is that even though the fish were created from the water and they live in the water. We were created from the earth, but we don't live in the earth. We walk on it. So that's one idea of kol sheyesh b'yam basher yesh b'yam. So why is the exception the chulda? There's a number of ideas behind it. One idea is the chulda represents the yetzahara, and therefore there's no yetzahara in the olam asel yonim, the malachim and whatever don't have a yetzahara because they recognize it, of course. Another idea, the Yerushalmi talks about the idea of chulda being some kind of rodent. It's always gathering and storing away food. Another possibility, actually, by the way, is that a chulda might be a squirrel. So it's always gathering and storing away food, and therefore the Yerushalmi says it's like a metaphor for people who are always gathering up riches and wealth and whatever as much as possible, as if not realizing that eventually they're going to die and they can't take it with them. So therefore, there's no such thing in the sea, because again, creatures that live in the sea, Alma Deascasia, don't have that kind of mentality. They understand that they're living for something higher than themselves. They understand that they're not just like squirrels gathering acorns. And they're
gathering in the sea, by the way.
But the point is they're not storing. Yeah, but the point is also the ruchni is sick of creatures, such as the malachim also don't see it. So the point is, therefore, in this capital, David HaMelech is telling Hazino Kol Yoshev Echola, this is capital Memtes, where he talks about the idea that don't think because you have a lot of riches, therefore you're saved because you can't take it with you anyway. So that's Hazino Kol Yoshev Echola. Don't be like that silly chulda, always hiding away caches of acorns. Realize that you live for something higher. Yeah, realize that you're living for something higher, for Olam Haba, not for this world. Okay.